happy to welcome back three poets who have graced many rivers, books, and TV before: Raphael Bloch, Bisu Stevenson, and Carl Frederick. And they describe themselves as three unrepentant, tea-drinking Sonoma County writers who are returning to navigate many rivers. So I will let you navigate. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Oh, push the button.
I did. Oh, don't push it again. Or we'll be guaranteed failure.
Yeah, move the saddle. Hi, thanks for coming tonight to hear what we've got for you. I'm going to start with a tea poem. It was actually written here. It's in the Renge form, last fall. Cool air, brittle leaves. Traffic pushes past the store. Inside, seven sit, under a row of teapots, tasting their own words.
The blue marker is the last time we were here, so I know that everything after that you have not heard, at least here. The negative. I don't have pneumonia. There was no earthquake today. Don't care about money or fame or welfare. I don't live in the desert. The war is not here. I have nothing inside, and there is nothing everywhere.
Hi, I'm a little nervous, shouldn't be, but I am. I want to share with you most of these poems this evening. I'm going to share with you they're pretty new. I mean, they are new. They're kind of fledglings. They haven't necessarily taken their maiden flight yet. This is it. And I'm hoping by doing that, taking that maiden flight with you, they'll strengthen their wings, their muscles, and with all of us, that's, you have a definite part to contribute there. I also want to just say a couple of things. Some of my poems touch on loss, which I think is a fundamental experience. In my case, we've all had millions of losses in our lives, but in my case, a major one was the loss of my wife about 6 years ago. And I think the experience is really general, see if it applies to you or not, whether you know you lost your favorite cuddly bear when you were 2 years old or whatever it happened to be. And so this first poem, which is kind of in response to both of you, is called Remorseless Ripples. And it appears to be a fall poem that I think it may be true for all seasons. And I'm way too far away if I need to cheat and peek at my own poem. So excuse me a second. Okay. Remorseless Ripples. Everything will be snatched out of our limbs as the fall winds breeze and tease, then tug and swell, remorselessly tearing our leaves of money, shredding our looks and bodily sheaths. What's left in the land? Only the ripples and roots of our laughter, troughs of tears, the drafts of love that we bring. So now it is fall, leaves fly, fly to the earth, and when our need is to cling, aren't we held in embrace by the pattering rain? For in the fragile ribbed web of our being, all is dissolving, only the core remains.
Wolf, at the hour of moon, howls. Howls for whom? A hoarse longing erupts in my throat. And I wonder why he is there howling, and I am here crying. Perhaps he is calling to me for help, and I to him for forgiveness.
Called Time and Wind. It turns out that time and wind are really the same. You flail or sway in them without choice. And whatever breaks your trunk or limb or leans you so long you grow that way also defines you. You notice you have changed. You look around, expecting to see the reason, and there is nothing.
Nobody comes for the architect. Okay, this one is definitely maiden flight. I won't tell you what it's about, you'll find out. Okay. The architect. Clambering around her mainframe, she lays precision cross beams, laying each one across her radial arteries. They come out of her core as she circumambulates, slithering and climbing, first one way, then another, and as she purposefully passes each cross point before continuing. See the silky light, how her structure reflects the sun. She freezes, a sudden tug in her web, curls up like one of her catches. Now she dives to the center to sit a while. Her temple swings delicately in the breeze. Two long guy ropes anchored to a fence, two to a rose where she nets aphids. She resumes her work, legs sweeping from side to side, torso tilting up and down. One more spiral of utter precision is laid. Rosebuds crane to peek at her dazzling architecture as they whisper in pink, are we less than she? She dances in tighter rings, feeling each tie's in place, each strut's in place. Sometimes I find, despite my bumbling, my lifelines too are being set with similar precision. She rests in her center.
I wonder if I shall ever see a microphone that's quite to my satisfaction. This is called The Simplicity of Sand. All day we ride west, ever deeper in the desert, casting shadows onto sand, where they lead, accompany, then follow, long and longer behind, lost in the evening air. When horizon's pale light sweeps blue to midnight overhead, cook fires burn low, sleep beckons, eyes close, and shadows return. Ride boldly atop our camels. Command our destinies until morning. As the east brightens, their last act is to prop our souls against the sky, shield the insistence of sun, and return in dark pools to the ease of sand.
Is called Open These Doors. Voice of Water, Second Hand Aria, Lapsed Alias, Millstone of Quintessence, Elated Godforsaken Exception and Laconic Corollary. Conundrum of Perilous Utopia. Plenary Ennui in Ugly Trajectory. Exempt Source of Compass in Eminent Quagmire. Psychedelic Impasse. Modeling. No Reservation. No Reserve. That was a collection of interesting words that I played with to come up with those sort of whatever kind of images. I just thought it was fun.
Great. Heaven for fun. We should have fun. This is a love poem. Yeah. How can I explain that I still miss the curves of your loving arms, your hungry breasts that fed our bonny one nigh 3 years, your nooks and crannies where we whispered tender words, the hidden crevasses that open to intimate glances, our ignited passions, the endless lapping gulf swaying under the moon's dark tides, fluctuating phases of silence, laughter, anger, pain, gushing, swelling, and arraigning. Your so eloquent twist of lip, flashing eye, raised crescent brow. Although the fertile mounds of your earth dissolved ages ago, how can I explain?
And this is about a very different kind of love. Octopus love. Octopus love, you might think, is all arms, all about wrapping. Maybe you'd be surprised to learn that it doesn't, can't last. When the biting and thrashing is over, and months later, a cloud of young arises, faint airs stream among them, swan songs for the elders who live another month or few, then drift silently, tentacles unwrapped, loose in deep waters.
Maybe I'll go with the animal theme here. Mouse, you only know what you know. Then, a little mouse runs from what you know, and you follow it through the tall grass, across the dry gully, dusty flash in warm summer sun. Its heart beats madly, You think you both might die. But before you can reach the mouse with your hand, the world becomes smaller, more kind, and you are gifted desire, chariot, and albatross.
This one's about young love, and if you haven't heard us before, and probably most of you have, and you want to hear us repeat something or have a question, right, about any of the poems, any of our work, I think it's fair to say we're all game to do that, yeah? So you're very wonderful, I see, intently listening, super polite audience so far. I know some of you brought ripe tomatoes or whatever, but if you want to ask us anything, you know, please feel free. It's your evening and our evening, and it kind of makes things a little livelier, and the chances are if you have a question or just want to hear something again, then, you know, other people probably do too. This poem's about young love, my 17-year-old daughter, in fact, is, and her boyfriend are the inspiration for this one. It's called Lasagna. Sounds of hooting spill up the path. High-pitched yelps issue from my daughter's mouth as he chases her towards the house. Chatter and banter fill the kitchen, overflow the rooms as they follow the recipe steps. One, minced onion. How? What size do they mean? Two, dry spinach. With what? Resting in an easy chair, I'm tickled to overhear and catch sight reflected in a window. A tender kiss, love's flowering innocence. This time around, I am but a witness. But my own delight, once father's mask is cast aside, is as great as was my own first love, and all I can do is wish them well on their heart's journey.
I'm a slow learner. I think this is okay. At any rate, you can hear me all right, can't you, whether I'm using it or not? I'm going to pick up on the mouse theme that Sue introduced. Perhaps too much this small creature depends on me. In my hand, its life, now mine, to do with as I will. Warm and trembling in my palm, I cannot tell the beating of its heart from the full body shudders which shake us both. Does it know the edge upon which it walks? What sacrifice is it prepared to make for me to see who else stands on that edge, whose soul really hangs in the balance?
We have a friend who is basically a spiritual painter. It's sort of hard to imagine, but we go to his apartment and he takes out these huge canvases that are like, I don't know, 5 by 5.5 or something. He puts them on the wall and makes you close your eyes until the painting's all ready, and then you get to open your eyes. And there's this sort of transformative process that takes place where often at first it looks like there's nothing on the canvas, or, oh, that's, you know, what's going on here? And then as you sit with it over time, things happen and it affects you, and, you know, you just like, oh my, oh my. And so I've written some poems to his some of his paintings. And this one is a painting of, I'll just describe it briefly, there's a kind of a sun-type half-circle-y, half-sphere, and then a level below that, and then all these sort of sparkly, colorful areas, and then at the bottom there's just sort of this other area that's more kind of quiet-looking. So I wrote this, it was sort of my reaction in affective interpretation, I don't know, it just sort of happened. Before union, come from your sky, cold before the touch, before the kiss. Faith into the slot where only your being may enter. No one can describe to you before your fall the reflection you will become, the song that will sing you. You will be prayer on the water, joy in blood, green in the red wine, evening sky in a white teacup, birds who love, light making love in the dark, begetting more light. And when your joy comes to rest at your own feet, there will be no country, no sun, no sea, no way, no death, no explanation.
Sequence. Threw me into a vortex.
It does have that effect. I was going to fill out with a mouse sign. That's some great. This one's called The Kiss, inspired by Sue's poem. What if your whiteness shriveled into brown, and your inner core, host of so many insect friends, began to change into large green interlinked cases like a turtle's or a pineapple shell, and the top of your yellow stamen shrank to burning black as your seed pod swelled, filling your body with heavy fruit, until one day your weight bore you down to the ground where you lay prostrate with longing. And your kernels, now yellow, turned into gold and tunneled in the earth. So you were half-merged, waiting for them to soften and sag, allowing your pale seeds to slip out of their amniotic sacs and seal the kiss.
This is called Lines. These lines of demarcation, they lie strewn about us in a marvelous disarray. Once we seemed to know what's yours, what's mine, but now they lie in disarray as dolls, akimbo in the sleep of careless lovers. These lines, once so carefully laid out in numbered rows, now in curves and kinks, and folded in upon themselves, I can no longer see just which are yours and which are mine. And as I lie with you in the tangled weave, I know there is no difference. These lines of demarcation, they do lie strewn about us in a marvelous disarray.
Love poem, but it could be more universal, I guess. It's called Wave. Your salty wave lifts these small moments and tiny bits of shell to dance with your water. And when you go back to the great bearded sea, everything settles again into one sand. Laughter shimmers on the sand just before the underglare, and rusty foams linger, awaiting the next transformation.
Time to launch another fledgling. This one's called When We Meet. A brash bumblebee scoops into wildly tumbling pollen, cupful after cupful, reels into a spider's web, sheer weight liberates itself to continue foraging. A red-sheened ladybug scuttles up and down a stem on six wheeling spindles. Shiny beetles sprawl on broad green plains. A tiny spider huddles. Nearby perches an orange-tipped tail spider moth, and above and beyond the buzzing, omnipresent, warbling twitters. Surely we all meet sometime, somewhere. And what then? Will I tumble gladly into your arms, jaw, belly, skein? Will I taste good to you as my substance becomes your substance?
The ocean is rising. The rocks are clattering among themselves in the rush and ebb, and the rough beauty of the arriving and departing of waters, which have no stake in the conversation, no say in the outcome, save to carry the words of the land and the dreams of the deep sea and the wide, wide conversation between. The ocean is rising. Rocks whisper their drowning. Last secrets spoken. Moonful tide gathers. Returns each sound to silence.
This is called Candle. Glacial water, center of black stone, first opening of hand or eye, each on the shoulders of the others. Only the sun peers over, and seeing inside opens the mouth and the core. For loving in the dark there, where one candle is enough, where girls are goddesses, and angels can't use their wings, because there is no sorrow, no movement, no other, no self. Only music in the silence, many in the one, honey and truth, and spring crocuses from rain and cold.
Thank you.
particular ocean poem in mind, but I'm not finding it yet. So give me a moment. If I don't, I'll do something else. Inspired by both of you. It's one I haven't done for quite a while. Here's a different ocean one then. I'm not seeing that first one, so we'll go for a different one. Okay, this was set in Bodega, but hopefully it could be set elsewhere too. It's called A Sweep of Galaxies. So different was this shore after winter's beating, so different. Sandbanks collapsed, washed away and restacked. Wooden walkways crumpled, upended trunks tossed like straws. The waves race in, following their own rhyme, etching and erasing folds of time. Each wet step slides into a pool of liquid glass, as thousands of particles awake, rapidly whirling into a vortex, surging, long, frothing gene strings merge in ocean's lap. A sweep of galaxies, a moment's trace, a dance of three-toed feet, a damp imprint, a fluttering of wings.
Is this a good time to get more audience participation?
Sure.
Okay, you need two or three subjects, victims. There's a little story here. I'd like you to participate in reading it, and it's going to be very simple, but I need two or three people. The part that you will read is obvious because it's highlighted in yellow. Who'd like to be a second reader? A third?
There is a simple society living by a river below a waterfall.
Now and then, broken and bruised by a fall to the rocks at the foot of the cascade, a stranger's body washes up on the riverbank.
No one unlucky enough to go over the falls ever reaches their shore alive.
It is customary for the village people to strip the dead strangers of anything of value and throw the bodies back into the river to float on downstream.
Afterward, they sit around the campfire and wonder.
Why do the dead come here? What is it they want? Is this place the afterlife? What lies above the falls?
One day, a young man goes exploring.
He climbs above the fall and sees a woman in distress in the river.
He reaches to save her, slips, and is drawn in.
Together they are swept over the brink and their bodies drift ashore.
All the village gathers to marvel at this new omen.
One of their own has come to them in the manor and in the company of one of the mysterious strangers.
In death, their differences seem small, and in a way beyond words, all are drawn into unconscious kinship with the known and the unknown.
A joint funeral is held.
Then on it becomes unthinkable to strip the bodies of strangers and to turn them to the river.
Finding a stranger becomes a privilege.
When a body washes ashore, the family on watch claims and names it as that of a long-lost cousin, mourns the passing, and accords high funerary honors for the person who can be a stranger no more.
One of the personal articles belonging to the newly found relative is given to the family elder, who incorporates it into a necklace of the belongings others found.
At the autumn moon ceremony, the elders gather to thank the long days and prepare for the long nights.
They lay their necklaces inside a hollow log and bury it, leaving it underground until the spring moon ceremony.
In the spring, they retrieve the necklaces from the earth and hang them in the trees by the river, where the sun allows their shadows to ripple among the fish.
Thank you.
That's great.
So we'd really like to encourage you to be involved with us, to ask for anything, whether it's a question, whether it's a request for a poem on some theme, or just anything at all. Blurt.
Don't think too hard.
Do you ever write together? Do you do joint poetry?
We have not. The three of us have not.
Made up smoking joints about that.
Yeah.
no, we haven't. But we've worked. I don't. If you heard us before together,
no.
We've been reading together. I think it's a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. It's maybe our fifth or sixth time or something. So we kind of learned to interact with each other and to listen to each other, hopefully. I mean, each time's a different experience. But no, I personally find it's writing is a pretty solitary activity. Maybe other people have different experiences. But I value that solitude and that space. For me, I think, you know, visual artists and dancers and other, you know, anyone who's being creative in your cooking, whatever. So it's a space you enter, and you can enter while you're gardening, you know. And it's very special because it kind of puts you in touch with something deeper within your own self, away from the daily clutter.
I would be curious, especially for, well, anyone to answer, but I'm going to ask it of you. When did you start writing poetry? I presume you started. Haven't been writing, or perhaps you wrote it as a child and then there was a hiatus, but I'm more interested in, you seem to be active in it now, and how did that get going, and how does it...
I think, I don't want to answer for you, Sue, but we both had similar triggers of losing a partner unexpectedly that catapulted whatever previous writing we've done, it just put it into a different level. And just speaking for myself, you know, I never took my poetry seriously, you know, I write a little verse for my wife and my daughter on a birthday card or, you know, Easter card or whatever. And I started a little bit, I was encouraged while doing a degree at New College Santa Rosa, who are closed now, by my tutors. He said, yeah, you, for your journal section, you can write poetry if you like. So I got some encouragement there. That was the year 1999, before my wife passed away. But after she did, I first wrote children's stories, because I've worked with very young children for many, many years. I wrote two stories. They take a while. They are not easy to write. It's like writing a novel or something. It really does take a while. And then I started writing poetry, and I found that really worked well for me, and I joined a poetry group which still meets here in town. And I started revising poems. You know, not only do I get feedback from other people, which means that you end up cutting out verses and rearranging stuff, but I enjoy the process of revising poems a great deal, which means I kind of print it out on a larger font, 16 in my case, whatever works for you, stick it up in front of me on the wall where I work. And then I can look at them any time and say, oh, let's change that, let's change this, that doesn't sound right. And over a period of time, they begin to mature, hopefully, or sometimes they never mature completely and you have to say, well, that's not going anywhere, I'll just shelve that one. I enjoy the process very much. Perhaps one of you would like to comment on your own experiences.
I think I'd say that first of all, you get to throw all rules to the wind and you just don't have to worry about that part, which for me was really nice, having sort of been raised in a very structured environment and worrying about how I looked or how I did things or that sort of thing. So that and having lost a partner, That sort of let me know what was really important and what wasn't. So there was this very clear division of, oh, that is not important, and then, oh, well, this really is. And the combination of those things where you can just go into this space and not worry about anything, and the sort of transformation or new view or new sort of heart in your center, you know, really was a good combination for me. And I think what happens for me is there's a level that is nonverbal, that there's something happening, or it's not just a feeling, it's a whole sensation or a sense of something or a connection, or you know, it's by definition nonverbal, I can't really describe it, but that happens maybe in, and it sort of changes in response to a certain environmental, you know, just a little trigger, you know, well, there's a beautiful color of pink up there in the corner, you know, and then, and what does that bring to this whole state? And then the words kind of come from the side to kind of indirectly describe that place or the state or the movement or what's happening. And then it can also write itself as you start to write, and that's it kind of folds over sometimes on itself and gets takes you to a place that you didn't really imagine would go when you started it. So kind of it's a fascinating process, and of course totally enjoyable and wonderful to share. It just feels like it's not mine, but it's everybody's and needs to be or wants to be out there. So.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your question, where it comes from in you.
I've just very recently gotten interested in writing poetry myself through some friendships, and actually through an email that you sent to me. And so I wrote poetry as a high schooler, and long hiatus. So you hear the autobiographical content in my question. Uh-huh. So.
Yeah. I had a long hiatus too. I started writing in college. And after college, shortly after I left college, I got married and I stopped writing. And through the next 20 years, I didn't write. And I had an experience of hearing David White at his first big public reading in 1987. And he reduced me to a damp rag on the floor with his poems. And I just realized how much I had missed writing for 20 years. And started again once in a while. I tend to write a little more frequently now, but it's what usually it's something that's hit me. It's not like I've planned to do this. Somebody sent me an email message and it kicks me into that mode. So I find that it's helpful for me to, when the muse comes knocking, answer the call then instead of try to postpone her. She'll go court someone else.
I know there are also visual artists here, and you know, I personally think you do it for yourself, whether it's singing, painting, cooking, gardening. You don't initially imagine an audience. You just try and be true to what's deepest in yourself, and then if it's going to go somewhere else, and if you choose to share that wonderful gift with other people, great, but if that's not a necessity, the first necessity is just to be true to yourself.
There was an event, I remember, it was, you two were, well actually, I had known Sue already, met her at Larry Robinson's Poetry Salon a couple years ago. Raphael, I heard for the first time in Healdsburg in January or February of last year.
2 years.
Well, my memory is last year. But, and Sue was reading on the same billing, and later the three of us got together. We had a reading in San Rafael last June. And so there was something about our very different styles, but common themes that seems to be At least it's interesting to us. I hope it's interesting to you. So, it's not like there's this big practice thing. You know, we haven't seen each other since the last gig. It's been January. So it's really kind of happening in the moment.
I notice you try to memorize your poems. Mm. Does it have a different meaning for you than if you just read it?
Well, I could answer that for sure, but in a way it's really more, I think, a question for the listener too. Does it sound different to you, whether someone is reading off a page or reciting? Perhaps it doesn't. I'm asking people here.
Charlie says yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's more like oral
tradition.
Yeah. And the way in person delivered to, you know, just like paper as well, delivers it from a certain flexibility.
Yeah.
Identification. I don't know how the timbers.
I mean, you're kind of using also a different part of your brain. You're not. Yeah. You don't have to engage the page. And I know Sue can't know that poems well enough that they're doing the same kind of thing, even if they appear to be looking at it, whatever. But it leaves me freer in that sense. And also, the words come out differently, and I don't really care if I change the lines, fluff up the lines. I mean, you know, I care. Trying to mess it up, but it happens as it happens, and that's okay. And oftentimes it's resulted in improvements because I've just spontaneously changed, you know, it's come out of my mouth in a different way. And that's okay.
I have to agree. Were it not for the tremendous work involved, I would be doing the same thing, because I think it's much more effective to deliver a poem from memory than it is to deliver it by looking. I like to be able to focus on the audience, actually, rather than on the page more. It's good, but it takes more work.
So. You have so many poems, all of you, but it takes so long to memorize them all.
Well, you only have a certain number you can share in an hour, so those are the ones I focus on. And other ones, you know, if I'm inspired as I was, I'll open the book and zone in and read it off the page. It's an old friend, but I don't necessarily... can't recite it just like that because my memory is not that great. I have to work at it.
Yeah. As somebody who's seen Larry Robinson do many poems, I too prefer, I think, poems recited from memory have more impact on the audience. If nothing other than the obvious investment that the poet made in memorizing. Mm-hmm. But and I know his technique, but I wonder what your technique is when you commit a poem to memory.
I don't know what his technique is. I just try and learn it little bit by little bit. I mean, it's easier because Larry's usually reciting other people's at the salons, often reciting other people's. I'm at least reciting what came out of me, so I ought to be semi-familiar with it, and then I just practice. And my memory isn't that good, so I do need to practice before a gig and, you know, learn the 10 or 20. You know, on anything like this, probably 10 is okay. On January, I probably learned 20, and very lucky if you get to do half of them. My memory isn't great, I just have to work at it. But it's fun too.
Keeps you on your toes.
Larry's method is to... start at the first word and get the first line down. And once that's solidly in place, he goes after the second line. Then he goes back to the first line and gets to make sure they're all still there, and then he gets the third line and so on. Until he gets to the end.
It's kind of the same thing I do when I commit one to memory. And that's just by accident that I discovered that seems to work for me.
Well, I think I've done a lot of public speaking, and I think, you know, if the first words come out okay and you're not getting too nervous, the sound of your own voice getting through those first lines is so reassuring that the anxiety just dissipates in your memory and emerges.
Yeah. More questions? More poems?
More poems.
I would love to share one in whatever order we're going in that has two voices that I have not memorized because it's in two parts. It's a rhythm. I haven't done anything like this before. But please, whoever wishes to, should I just go ahead or do you?
Sure, know? Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to try this one. It's called Narcissi. And as I said, it's in two parts. I think I'll read it first, and then if it's not clear, you have questions, we'll go to it afterwards. Let me attempt explanations beforehand. I will get me to the bottom of the hill and find rock bottom, to smell the narcissi rose, sniff my shadow. I may see the first wild berry flowers, a whiff of dull red smouldering, red tail perched on power lines, wild glowering anger, spying out prey, shackled ravens, interrupted by passing cars, spewing fumes, while white plum blossoms spill scents onto the road, suffocating those I love. I will dally under the canopy of the fresh green oak, wallow in the muds of self-pity, listening to the murmuring of last year's amber leaves, savouring the simmering moaning of past ghosts. Each neighbour I meet will stop to chat, every neighbour I'll greet, about this and that, with a chameleon's mask, and I'll stretch my neck to watch, crane to catch, the pygmy nut thatch assiduously tunnelling for grubs, a glimpse of anything else. When I reach those narcissi, yes, anything else. Kneeling, I will bury my nose and rise with heaven's touch, but my own fallen, terrifying beauty. I will gaze with fresh eyes, stare with pained view, at the delicate lines on the Kaya lily's face, concerned wrinkles, watching her spiraling sisters unfurl, seeing another so snagged. I will hitch my hands to the two empty trash cans, drag my cultivated burdens, towing them back along the pebble drive, like Siamese twins. Arriving home in trance, spot-spouting clouds deflect, returning in a trance, the ebbing colours of our sun, draining colours, while a cooing dove and children's cries pry into boiling blackness, fill the early evening air.
Sorry, I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's a good comment. I find it's true for myself, that thing that some people call the shadow. I certainly have one, and that's what's interesting. I think we can be coasting along. Can you hear me okay at the back there? You can be coasting along, thinking everything's okay, and quite a different, another reality may be playing itself out. We usually discover that if we live with someone else, and suddenly there's a flash of anger in the household, and you don't quite know where it came from, except, you know, your child or partner says, it's coming from you, mate. You better look at it. So I find that's true to my experience, and I wanted to try and convey that those two levels, to acknowledge them in some way, because they are a source of power too. I think as soon as one becomes aware of what's happening in one, if one can accept those, in this case anger, it could be terribly hard to accept that about oneself, that yeah, I'm an angry person at times, you know, this is part of who I am. And just accept one's feelings. It sounds pretty easy, and I'm still struggling with that at this point in my life. thank you for being an audience in that
case. You want to do a final? Do two final ones. Well, we're coming to the close.
This is like my, I guess this is sort of my ultimate love poem in honor of my upcoming wedding to this lovely person here. Our upcoming wedding. It's called Visitor. I actually wrote it before we met, but it's sort of an ultimate love poem to me. Visitor. You have put your ladder down into the cavity of my chest. The ancient air there is surprised by its own currents and small bits of dried mud falling from your earthly boots as they balance on highest rungs. Your forehead light looks around, exposing this lovely gold, stale bread, and hollow bones. Please bring your bag of grasshopper hope, your caged bird. Release them here first, so they may uncover their small eyes and wing the threshold to tall trees and unbearable mercy.
We can just pull the plug now.
Rest well. Ease into the great sky. Deliver yourself to God each night until you know the path from dusk to dawn better than the daylit dream. Wait here. There is always more. Wait for the world to lie down, to ask for your gentle step. Forever between places you never come to know, this meandering path, the only home you'll ever have.
Time for a song?
Actually play this, so if it disappoints you, but I need a B flat. I'm hoping my daughter's tuned at least one of these strings to that. This is a new song I haven't shared with people yet. So I need a yoga guitar. Okay. On the shores of the sea, waves pounding in glee, your sounds showed me how to dance. A jig reeling inside, you made me step to your time. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by. Playing to a hidden song, your crashing waves brought along. On the shores of the sea, waves pounding in glee, your sounds showed me how to dance. A jig reeling inside, you made me step to your time. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by. Whirling round, round and round, lifted up and then plunged down. Playing to a hidden song, your crashing waves brought along. On the shores of the sea,
Waves pounding in glee, your sound showed me how to dance. A jig reeling inside, you made me step to your time. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by. Reaching out and reaching in, your silent song set me in spin. Whirling round, round and round, lifted up and then plunged down. Playing to a hidden song, your crashing waves brought along. On the shores of the sea, waves pounding in glee, your sounds showed me how to dance. A jig reeling inside, you made me step to your time. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by. Expected sprays of tears, but plying rhythms between our beings brought quite different showers. By the shores of the sea, waves pounding in glee, your sounds showed me how to dance. A jig reeling inside, you made me step to your time. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by. Didn't care how I looked to passers-by.
I just wanted to say I brought some little booklets of my poems and help yourself. And if you'd like to put a couple extra dollars in the little...
That's my
answer. Oh, okay. Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Okay.